everybody. Welcome to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott. We got Tim joining us. Tim, are you going to be okay this episode?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. Thanks for asking.
All right. Your leg's still broken?
Still broken. Working on it.
All right. Well, we're thinking about you. Let's try to stay awake for the episode. It's going to be a good one. You don't want to miss it. We have a two-time cup champion with us. And now we're not talking about the Stanley Cup. That's easy to win. We're talking about the more important John Scott Cup given out annually in Minnesota at the Bremer Arena. James Van Riemsdyk is with us. James, thanks for coming on the show, my friend.
I love that intro. Love that intro.
Well, gosh, when you win it twice, that's hard to do. It's really – so for those of you listening, they do a tournament. Gosh, they've been doing it for how long now? 5-6 years?
Yeah, I think it's been – maybe longer than that. It's been, maybe 5 or 6 years. And obviously last year we weren't able to do it because of COVID. But, it's been running a while now.
So they it's – there's like I want to say 30 to 40 NHL guys out there. They play a tournament all summer long. It culminates with this playoff system. And, James, you've won it twice, which is impressive. There's a lot of guys out there. It's a good skate. But what does it mean to win my cup twice, James? Just touch on that real quick for the fans.
Yeah, you know what? The most impressive one, I'm pretty sure the inaugural one, I can't remember the second one, but you were out there handing over the trophy. So that was a nice gesture by you.
It was a tough trophy to give away, but it's good. It is what it is. But anyways, thanks for coming on the show. I know you're busy. You just had one and you got another one on the way, which is insane.
Yeah.
You know what, boy or girl?
Not yet. Not yet for the second one. We have a baby girl, Scarlett, who just turned one. A few weeks ago, and then we'll find out what this other one is in the coming weeks here.
I hope it's a girl. I hope it's a girl. Just to join the club. It's great.
Yeah. Are all 6 years girls, by the way?
They are, yeah.
Okay.
My That's wife always
some
said
kind of record.
Well, I was around men my whole life, and so you kind of get what you need. So
yeah, there you go.
But anyways, moving on, as Tim knows, I say quite often. Now, James, we usually when we have guests on, we're like, oh, this is going to be great. We'll talk about this. We'll talk about that. When you agreed to come on, we're like, wow, okay. Big superstar. Big, big superstar. Not a great season in Philadelphia. Big expectations. You started the season off on fire. Like, absolutely on fire. I think you went 12-3-5 or 12-5-3. I picked you guys to come out of the East. I was all jacked up. I'm like, this is the year. Giroux, Voracek, those guys are going to put it together. It's going to be fantastic. And then you just hit the wall. The wheels fell off. Everything just got flipped upside down. I know you've probably answered this question 100 times. You probably thought about it. You probably have had 15 team meetings during the season when you were just in the midst of it. What happened? Just try to break it down for me.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking back on it, like you mentioned, like when you're in it, you're trying to, again, try to get yourself out of it as a team and figure out a way to just get the 2 points and string some wins together and do what you need to do. But for whatever reason, we just could never find that consistency. And again, obviously, it seems like the teams that are doing well this year, like they've been able to handle the challenges of a unique year with COVID and the different kind of pauses that there have been because of that. And then the different challenges of, again, if you're someone who likes to be around a lot of people and doing a lot of different things, this is going to be a tough year for you just because of some of the rules we had to live by to make the season go on. And again, obviously we're very privileged to get to work and things like that. But, sometimes those challenges, I feel like, can be tougher for some than others. And I think that it made the swings of the season. Like usually, obviously, as we all know, going through an 82 game season, there's going to be highs, there's going to be lows and stuff like that. But when you're able to take your mind off the game a little bit easier in a normal year, I think that definitely helps. But for whatever reason, it just seemed that we could never kind of get our footing after we started to slip. So it's hard to just pinpoint one thing. I mean, obviously everyone had to deal with these things and certainly there's teams that dealt with it way better than we did. I don't know. It was a combination of just things like that, I would say.
I never even thought of that. Honestly, that's a good point because when you're, I played on some bad teams, like some really historically bad teams. In Buffalo, I think we set the record for least goals scored in the season. But to get away from the rink and to just go grab dinner, go out, you know, just get your mind off, that's needed. And gosh, and when you're living in it day in and day out and you're in a funk, that's got to be tough mentally. Who was the guy in the room who just tried to loosen things up? Like, was that you trying to joke around, being the guy to loosen things up a little bit?
Yeah, you know, we have a great group of guys that all get along really well. So we have a few guys that can kind of play that role of, again, keeping things light and making it fun to come to the rink and things like that. Ultimately, like this year, again, it was different in the sense of obviously when we're at the rink, you're trying to keep your distance in a lot of certain things. And even at the hotel, like you're basically in your own room a lot and things like that. So for me, obviously having a family, that was good because I had a lot of time at home with them. And I always enjoy that, and you get more of that in a year like this just because of how the schedule was. But I can only imagine for some of the single guys throughout the league, it certainly is a challenge, and I'm sure they had to find some different things to do to fill up their time to just kind of feel like they had more going on, and maybe some of that loneliness that you can sort of feel if you're just living by yourself.
The darkness, it sets in quickly. But okay, so I broke into the league in 2000. I can't remember, a long time ago. The Philadelphia Flyers had Claude Giroux, Jakub Voracek, and then you came along not so long that after. Now, fast forward 12 years later, the Philadelphia Flyers, they still have you guys. What needs to happen in Philly for you guys to be successful? Because every year, I love the Philadelphia Flyers. I know when I played, you guys were always so good. Like, you just had solid teams, and obviously you made that one cup run your first year. What needs to happen in Philly for that to happen again? Because the cast is not changing, right? Like, what's going to change from this year to next?
Yeah, you know what? That's a good question. And again, I have an interesting perspective on that. Like you mentioned, I was the start of my career, my first 3 years were in Philadelphia, and you mentioned some of those guys that were there for that. So I was there, came into the league with Claude Giroux, and then Voracek was traded there for my last year, and Sean Couturier was drafted there my last year in Philadelphia, and then obviously go through 6 years in Toronto and then come back. So it is kind of interesting how there are a bunch of things that are different. Obviously, those are the only guys that are the same, but yeah, ultimately, again, those are some key guys on the team. Team still as well. So again, as we know, it's really hard in this league to win and be successful, and it's such a fine line sometimes. And yeah, I don't know, just looking forward, like what the recipe is for that. I think, again, if it, like you said, we think about these things all the time during the season, so it's kind of sometimes tough to pinpoint one specific things. But ultimately, I think we got a good mix of players and guys, and ultimately, this year wasn't good enough, and I'm sure there'll be some tweaks in the off season to whatever the management obviously decides with that, and then we'll kind of go from there. But I definitely think we have a lot of good pieces in place, and ultimately, it's up to us as players and the coaches to put it all together and find a way to get the job done.
That's a very safe answer, James. Good for you. You didn't throw anybody under the bus like I would have. My year-end meetings, they're like, John, what did you think of the season? And I would just be like, you know what? This guy stunk. This guy sucked. You should have done this, this, and this. And then I was like, I was best player on the team. I'm out of here. So you mentioned you got traded to Toronto. I've actually wanted to ask you this for years. That maniac Phil, when he attacked me, why did you not jump in and try to either A, fight me, or just protect me from that animal? What happened? What was going on in your head when that happened, and why did you not address me whenever we played you guys? Because it was just insane.
I even on the ice for that? I don't even remember.
You were
all
not.
All I remember is the memes. But afterwards, the lightsaber.
What did Phil do in the locker room? I've always wondered. I've asked him. He's never agreed to come on the show. What was he having fun in the locker room after that?
Yeah, like I think like, well, he was definitely happy about that. He thought he did well in the fight after. So I think he took Brian Flynn and those guys went at it.
He cut Flynny up. We never let that down.
Oh, yeah. So I know they're the same height, but I think Phil's probably got him by maybe 30 pounds or so. So that might not have been the same weight class there. But yeah, that was, I remember hearing the story of that. And I remember, I think what you may have said something to him like, hey, I'm grabbing you. And he like looked at you and I think he laughed. You're like, no, I'm not kidding or something. And then it just all happened. And then all the chaos after that, that broke loose. But yeah, that was definitely one of the crazier kind of ordeals that I've been a part of.
No inside stories. Randy didn't come in the room and just start lighting everybody up. Nothing.
No, nothing really like that that I remember. I think I'm trying to remember like some of the other specifics around it, but what, because it all started, what was that? There was a, was there a fight early in the game that like a guy was Devane, a little bit overmatched, right?
Jamie yeah. Devane knocked out Corey Tropp the shift before.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And
yeah.
So then I told Carlisle, I'm going to beat up whoever he puts out. And then he put out Phil. Yeah. And I was like, all right, like
that must be why Randy didn't say anything, because he's like, he doesn't remember that part of the story.
What was it like, man, playing in Toronto? You guys were under a microscope there. You had Dion Phaneuf. You had such a polarizing cast of guys with Phil and Dion and Joffrey Leupold and guys who were good hockey players. What was it like playing in the biggest market on the biggest stage? And you had all these guys and you just had high expectations. How cool was that?
I absolutely loved my time there. Just like thinking about it, like growing up and like you envision like playing in the NHL, obviously starting with Philadelphia and as great of a market and as much interest as they have here for hockey. I mean, it's just like hockey is the thing in Toronto and basically across Canada, like that Leafs are their team and people, again, there is that microscope that you're kind of under and that bubble that you're living under. So you get great support from both cities. And I think playing in Philadelphia definitely prepared me for going to Toronto and just that kind of that fishbowl that it can be. But yeah, I absolutely loved my time there. And those guys you mentioned, it's funny, like you said, because they've played there, I think you get kind of that polarizing point of perspective just from around, like going into that, like certainly you see stuff in the media and how people are portrayed and things like that. But getting to meet some of those guys, like you mentioned, like Phil, Dion, Loops, Dion, I still consider to this day one of my closest friends and one of the best teammates I've ever played for, one of the best leaders I've ever played with. So yeah, it was definitely, I enjoyed my time there a lot. And I wish it could have gone a little bit better, particularly in those early years. But I think towards the end there, we really started to turn a corner, and obviously they're continuing on that now with some of the same group that was there towards my last few years.
What did you think of Randy as a coach and just his style of just like literally having two to three super tough guys on the team and on the ice at all times? Did you like that? Do you think they were taken away from the ice? Because no other team was doing that.
No, like I owe a lot of my success in my career to Randy. I think especially when I first got there, like he really gave me a chance to kind of spread my wings and really show what I could do as a player. So I'll always be grateful to him for that. But again, I think with the teams that we had there and the style of play that he liked to play, like certainly you felt like you could sit up a little taller with the guys that we had in the lineup. And guys like Colton Orr and Fraser McLaren and Mark Fraser, they were guys that you love to have on your team, great teammates. And again, we all loved having them out there with us. So I think, again, as far as how that goes, we definitely felt that comfort of being able to go and play against anyone. And in those days, I think the big thing was that Boston-Toronto sort of rivalry, and they felt like the Bruins were kind of taking advantage of the Leafs a little bit or pushing them around a little bit. So I think that's kind of where that all started to shift with that. And we had that crazy series my first year there where we ended up clawing our way back down 3-1 in the series. And then you get to game 7 and we're up 3-1 with like 10 minutes left or whatever it was. And then the game gets away from us. And then obviously the rest is history from there, or it might've even been 4-1. I think
it was 4-1.
It was 4-1.
So I love Jake Gardiner. everyone who listens know I love Jake Gardner. I skate with him in the summer. You obviously skate with him in the summer. I think he's an unbelievable defenseman. What? How hard was it for him to be in Toronto? Honestly,
to this day, still one of my closest friends, and I live on the lake with them in Minnesota. So I see him all the time. We train together, skate together, in the summer. But, no, I think, again, there's definitely like we mentioned about swings of the season this year, obviously a different sort of thing in Toronto, but there certainly is a lot of those swings up there just because every single game, good or bad, like you're seeing the highlights of what happened. And ultimately, as we know, it's a game of mistakes. We're all going to make them and stuff like that. So a lot of them get magnified to a higher degree up there. But again, he was a great player for the Leafs and was a part of a lot of successful teams up there and did a lot of great things. So I definitely take him on my team any day.
Well, you tell him this summer that I honestly thought he was going to win the Norris last year. I think he's that good. Honestly, and I'm not even blowing smoke up his behind. I think he's a great defenseman. And Tim always gives me a hard time because I just love me some Jake Gardner. I really do. I think he's a solid D-man. I don't know.
His style is good. Like how he can, again, I like how he stays up and skate. It seems like a lot of the times, like he's skating forward and really taking that good angle, almost like a forward would. And that's kind of how he's able to get back and get pucks and things like that. So his style is definitely unique for a defenseman, but he does, like, he skates so well and sees the ice so well and stuff like that. So he was, I always like being out there on the ice with him. Up there just because he was going to get the puck out of the zone and we could go play offense.
Did you hear that, Tim?
Yeah.
You hear that? He would be 1A in Boston right now, without a doubt.
No. Come on. Over who?
All of them, because he's 1A, Tim. That's what it means.
McAvoy.
Every single one of them.
Like Carlo, come on. James, I want to bring it back to this season a little bit. That game, you guys lost 9-0 against the Rangers.
And obviously, Tim. Oh, no.
Twitter's all over it. The media's all over you guys. And then a week later, there's an 8-3 game. Does that kind of thing, like, take a toll on the locker room, the morale? Or is it, at the end of the day, is it just a loss like any other else?
You know. Let me just touch real quick. So, funny story. I reached out to James before those two games. And I was like, James, come on the show, man. It'll be great. And you're like, sounds good. Let's do it. And then you just got shelled. And you goes, you know what? Let's just save it. So,
yeah.
Sorry, I jumped on your answer.
Yeah, no worries. That obviously was one of the, I think, probably the worst, most lopsided game I've been a part of in my career. And it was just, again, it was just one of those ones that, it seemed like every mistake that we made just ended up in the back of our net and it started to snowball. And it's definitely tough one to swallow. And you're pissed off and you're mad. And obviously we play them a week later and ultimately looking at it on the other side of the coin, like I'm sure those guys, like they were feeling really confident coming in to play us the next time, just because it seemed like they could do whatever they want and every bounce was going their way. And they were, again, I think in those two games, Zibanejad, I think, had like 12 points or something crazy like that. So, yeah, they had their top guys feeling really good. And, yeah, I don't know. I think that's just kind of a small snapshot into just our season, just as far as not being able to find that consistency and just too many mistakes at the wrong times and things like that and just not being all on the same page. I think if one other thing I could point back to for our season is just, it just seems like for whatever reason, we could never find some of that. I don't know if chemistry is the right word, but just playing as that five-man unit all over the ice. I think, we know how it is with the forwards and the defensemen, especially needing to read off each other so that the defensemen know when they can be aggressive and the forwards know when they should be available for an option and things like that to help break out of the zone. It feels like some of those, like, again, when we started to kind of get off our game, we kind of struggled with things like that. So, I don't know, just looking into those two games, that was definitely something those were tough.
We lost when I was in Chicago to Edmonton one time. I think it was 9-2. That was my worst loss. But James, I was actually +1 in that game. So I'm just saying, I played pretty well. Do you know your plus minus in the two games combined, James?
Wow. I would say, so I think the first one I was like minus two or three. And then the second one, I do not remember at all. So do you know?
I don't. I did look at your stats today. Do you know what year was your worst plus minus year?
Yes, I do. In Toronto, I think it was my second year. I was like, me, Phil, and Bozy were the line, and I think we were like minus 34. I was minus 33, and then minus 35 when someone else was. So that was I think someone blew us out of the water with minus 40-something. So that was a tough year in that sense. But to our defense, I will say, I think we swallowed about 15 empty net minuses that year. So
which I will say tough. That I don't think those should count against your plus minus.
Yeah, I think it should be like power play. I don't think or actually power agreed. Play would count against you, but I don't think you should get a plus for those, and I don't think you should get a dash for letting one up on those situations.
I agree. I do think you should get a minus for a shorthanded goal against. I don't know if you do. I think you
might. Yeah, you do. Yep.
All right. So you're a minus 33. I actually did. Do you know what your average time on ice was that year? I was blown away when I saw this.
22 something.
Isn't that crazy? You played 22 minutes a game.
That was the year. And that's where that's the funny stories about Phil kick in, by the way. So like we were playing so much that year, and like Phil, like, likes the feel and the rhythm of the game, obviously loves to play a lot. Like,
what does that mean? Feel the rhythm of the game.
Like he likes to just get out there all the time. So like he wants to like be out there every few minutes. He doesn't want to be sitting on the bench. So like there'd be times in the game, we'd be sitting there on the bench. And like you said, we're playing like 22 minutes a night. I don't know what his average was, but it had to be close to that if I was playing that much. And he'd look over to me and he goes, they're dead legging us again. I'm like, they're dead legging us. We're going to play 22 minutes. What are you talking about? So like, he's such a character, and I love Phil. And he had some funny one-liners like that over the course of playing with him. But we played a lot. And I don't know if that was just because, again, that year we weren't very good and we were chasing a lot of games. So like, obviously in those situations, we were going to play a lot more, trying to find more goals and things like that. But yeah, that was thanks for bringing up the 9-0 right back to back with the minus 33. I appreciate that.
Well, that's a high mark, minus 33. Now, I didn't play enough minutes to get the minus 33, but that's bad. That's bad.
That's tough. That's like on my career, I think I'm like minus 37, and that's all pretty much from the 1 year. So
yeah, but how many power play points did you have though?
That year, it was around 15 to 19 or something when I was in Toronto, so probably somewhere in there.
It's still minus 33, Tim. It's still terrible. There's no way to sugarcoat it. So many empty netters. Listen to him. The goalie was bad. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the East. It was the group. I don't know if you're a World Cup fan. I get geeked up in the soccer. They always do the group of death. Whatever, you know, group you get put in, you don't want to be put in with England and Spain and them. When the schedule was released and you saw your group, what did you think when you saw those teams?
Yeah, first reaction was definitely this seems like top to bottom going to be one of the toughest division with the teams that were in there and the success that they'd had like in the recent future. And it looked like, again, even looking at the off seasons that a lot of the teams had, like just felt like everyone kind of got a little bit better and made some adjustments. So certainly we knew we were going to have our work cut out for us in that regard.
So what happened then? Who was the best team in that division? Did the predictions live up to the actual what happened? Because Buffalo stunk. The Devils were average. They played hard. Who were the best teams in that division? I'm interested because the playoff series right now, they're obviously tied 1-1. It's pretty even. Do you feel like you competed with those teams? Was there any team that just stood out to you guys?
Yeah, I would say for me, the team that definitely stood out the most would be just the Caps at the end of the year. It just felt like they didn't really have any holes, and they had lots of guys like slotted right on their team, and they just were tough to play against. I feel like they could kind of play the game any different way you want to play. Like they have a lot of toughness on their team. They have a ton of skill. And again, they have that power play too that basically you'd put that up against anyone. So that was the team that was – definitely for me, the toughest that I thought was the best team. But again, certainly the other ones that made the playoffs all are good teams too, and made some adjustments at the deadline, a lot of them. And it's, yeah, we'll see. I mean, you got the Islanders, and as we know, with the way that Lou likes to build teams and stuff like that, everyone's got their job and everyone's going to play their role and things like that. So they're going to be tough to beat. And then with, yeah, looking at Pittsburgh and just with the way Crosby's going, and just again, he's carrying the charge, and it seems like they're peaking at the right time. I think they were definitely a team that I noticed as the year went on. They got better and better and better. So they're peaking at the right time.
Does it annoy you that, those, like, you're just as good as those guys? Is it annoying to see Crosby all the time? It's like the carrot in front of the horse. It's like, gosh, because you're just as good as those guys. I've played against all you guys for, you know, 10 years, and every, like, Giroux's just as good as Crosby, in my opinion, with his hands, with the way he plays the game. Like, they're very similar type players. I don't know. Does it ever frustrate you to have those guys in your division always? And it's like, come on, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I've gotten a chance to know Sid a little bit off the ice. I've been in the same kind of training groups of him for a few summers. And just seeing the way that he works, like, you're not shocked at all, like, how long and how good he is and how long he's been able to do it for. So, yeah, that would be the – with him, it's insane. Like, we'll be out there, like, in the summer. We'll just have finished, like, a turf workout or something. We'll be on the ice, and he'll be, like, one of the last guys on the ice after the skate's going, after we're already dead. And he's out there just working on tips or working on hands in tight or a shot or whatever. So, I mean, it's impressive to see him with all he's accomplished and how long he's been doing it for. Just that drive that he has to continue to be great. So you can only really respect what he does just because of all that.
Just a really another great politically correct answer, James. That's exactly what I wanted. you're really speaking the truth.
How can you dog a guy like that though, right? It's like, if he's that dialed in and that wants, and is that, you know, it's like, yeah, you got to.
I can dog him pretty easy. Just listen to the podcast. I rip on everybody. So who do you got coming out of the East then? Who's your team? You mentioned Washington at the end of the year. Have you watched any of the games? I don't know. Who do you think is going to come out of the East?
Yeah, I've been watching a little bit of them, and I think for me, I've got a younger brother who is in the mix on Washington too. He's played down the stretch, so I'll probably just go with them. I think, like I mentioned, they have a really strong team, and I think they're really deep. And for his sake, I'll go with those guys.
Are you and Trevor the best brother pairing in the NHL?
So let's see who else we got there. We got to go against, I mean, you have to go with the Stalls, I think, for that, don't you?
There's the Stalls, the Foligno's.
The Kachucks.
Stroms. Benz.
All right. I didn't hear a yes or no. You guys got to be up there.
We'll put us in the top five of that group. I think there's five names, so put us in the top five.
All right. So you got, who do you got coming out? You got the Washington coming out of the East. What do you think of this playoffs? Do you think your division is stronger than the other divisions, just based on what you've seen?
It's impossible to say. I would say, obviously,
another politically correct answer.
No, I'll give you a real answer. I think some of the other divisions were a little bit more top heavy, and if you look to the last couple of years, I mean, you see teams like particularly like Colorado and Vegas, and those are going to be again two, I think, contenders. And then obviously with the Leafs too, it just seems like with kind of some of the adjustments that they made with the guys they brought in, I think that will definitely be a good mix for them too. But this is going to be the weirdest year, obviously, as far as predicting things, just because you don't have any of that sort of between division or conference play to really judge anything on. So once we get there, like, it's going to be, I feel like, yeah, if you're looking to bet on anything, you're going to have a hard time at that point, just because you don't have any of that familiarity that you would have in years past.
So somehow, some way, the Philadelphia Flyers get relocated to Windsor before the start of this season to even out the numbers. What place do you guys come in the North?
In the North? I think we would make the playoffs in the North, but I don't know. It's easy to say now.
I think you're right. I think you come second in the North. The North is atrocious. I'll say it. I'm not afraid to say it. All right. Whatever. You got the East. That's good. So this offseason, you're getting the Seattle Kraken, James. I don't know if you know this, but they do an expansion draft. Have you heard of this thing?
No, it's the first time I've ever heard of it.
So the way it works is every team gets to protect a certain amount of players. I did a little research, James, and I don't want to break this to you this way, but I heard you're not going to be protected. That's what I heard. I know Chuck Fletcher, not intimately, but I know him. He was my GM in Minnesota. I did not talk to Chuck. I'm just saying I know him. What's going to happen if the Seattle Kraken get to Philadelphia Flyers and they say, we would like to take James to play on our team to be a captain? What goes through your head if that happens?
What goes through my – so if they approach
– If they take you from Philly, if you get left, if you get exposed, what are you thinking?
Well, ultimately, like when I signed, like knowing – what was it, 3 years ago now, like, and obviously going through this was – knowing this was coming after this year and not having any of the no move or stuff like that, like you realize that this could be a possibility. So yeah, it's going to be a weird summer in that sense, just because there is that degree of it's out of a lot of people's hands. Like usually your fate, you know what I mean? Like either your GM knows for sure what's going to happen or anything like that. But in this case, like it's going to be, there's lots of moving parts to this. So I feel like there's a lot of, it's a big poker game between all these general managers and management to try to figure out that sort of stuff. But I think just for me, I think like I've loved my time in Philadelphia. Like I signed here to be here and would love to be here. But again, about Seattle, it's a unique opportunity in the sense of you don't get to be on the ground floor of many things, especially in this business. So that could be kind of a unique challenge as well and a unique opportunity in that sense. So yeah, I think ultimately whatever's going to happen will happen. And you just kind of go with the flow and go from there.
Have they given you any indication at all in your year in meetings or anything like, listen, James, sorry, we got a numbers game, got a lot of young guys we want to protect, no move clauses. Was there anything like that?
No, it was, our meetings were pretty short. So yeah, not much as far as that. So I'm sure, again, who knows if the teams even know for sure yet. Just like I mentioned, like there's going to be teams now that are playing in the playoffs and maybe they lose sooner than they thought and they're going to shake things up or whatever. So I still think there's going to, and with the lower cap, I think that's going to make it even more movement than maybe there would be otherwise. So I think there's still going to be a lot of moving parts between now and whatever it is, like end of July. So yeah, I think, I guess that sort of stuff's good for the game. I think though, it brings a lot of interest and gets people talking about it. And it's going to be a fun summer in that sense.
Last question. I just find it fascinating that this whole thing even exists. You sign a contract, you think you're going to stay in a spot. Is there a level of just like disrespect if you don't get protected? And you don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but like, just say you don't get protected and they end up taking somebody else from your team and you have to go back and you'd be like, okay, like, I don't know.
That's interesting. I haven't really thought about that too much yet. Ultimately, like you said, there's other moving parts where maybe there's teams that cut deals to protect certain guys. So maybe you'll never know for sure what is, but I mean, we're all competitive. Like you all want to feel like you're a big part of the program or the organization or whatever that you're at. So, I mean, I guess there's some degree of that, right? Like you'd like to think that, especially again, I feel like I want to continue to, go on the trajectory that I'm at as a player and continue to just try to be consistent in that sense. And I think I still have a lot of good hockey left in me. So I think there would be a little bit of that sense of like of that competitiveness and that competitor inside of you that's kind of a little pissed off about it. But ultimately, again, those things are going to happen the way they're going to happen. And I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens come July.
Yeah, it is. It will be interesting because you nailed it. You are probably one of the most consistent players in the NHL. Honestly, I'm not just blowing smoke. You consistently get 65 points, 60 points. I think you average 0.65 points a game, which is unbelievable. You know what I mean? For you. And I don't think you get valued as much as you should. When you look at teams, the teams you've played on, it's like, oh, they got Phil. Oh, they got Voracek and Giroux, they never think of you when you're the, like, you led the team in points this year. I'm not just, whatever, you're a good hockey player. I'm just saying, Seattle would be happy to get you, James. I believe in you. I don't know. I think it's such a weird thing to be able to, like, just assemble a team out of just all these players. I don't know, it's so weird to me.
And it doesn't, it's obviously, it only happens so often, right? Like, what is it? I mean, obviously with Vegas and then years ago with some of those other teams coming in, but it's a weird sort of time for it all to happen. And again, like we said, with the lower cap, it kind of throws a whole another curveball into this, where I think teams are going to be able to really get squeezed by Seattle, just because I'm sure there's teams that are dying to have some more cap space and things like that. So I think we'll see a lot of player movement this summer. And yeah, it's going to, again, like I said, I think that's good for the game. I think it creates more buzz and more interest. And I'm sure certain guys, again, it sometimes sucks to have to kind of move your family or whatever and go to different places, but it's all part of it. It's new opportunities, new challenges, and you got to embrace all that to have a long career.
You might have a career in politics after you're done. I'm telling you what, like, Tim, isn't it amazing?
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's so polished. It's a beautiful thing. Do you work on this?
I played in Toronto for 6 years. You gotta be the master of what is it? Saying a lot to say nothing.
Yeah.
How does that go?
You're speaking a lot. You're not saying anything. What was it like watching? I felt bad for Dion when he would do those interviews, because it would be the same questions 15 different ways, and it always it revolved around, why aren't you doing more, Dion? What's going on? And Phil wouldn't take it. Phil would be like, get out of my face.
Yeah.
I don't know. I keep going back to that because I played Toronto so much being in that division. But how tough was that watching those guys just like get in front of the firing squad every game?
Yeah, you know what? I was able to fly under the radar a little bit there, just because, again, my first couple years you had guys like Phil and Dion and Loops. And then towards the end it was Austin, Mitch, Willie, Morgan Riley. So, yeah, I mean,
Jake Gardner.
Jake Gardner. Yep. Speaking just to your boy. Speaking just to Dion, though, like, I think that's one of the other things that kind of made him such a good teammate, such a good leader, is that he did shoulder the brunt of a lot of those things, and we saw that around the team. But he would just take it, and he would never complain, and he just went about his business. Was an ultimate kind of professional, ultimate teammate. And yeah, that's the interesting thing, because like I heard a lot of different things like going in there, like again the perception of him before I got to Toronto, and like I said, like right after I got traded, I think it was like 30 seconds after I hung up with Berkey, I get a call, which is still his MO to this day for Dion. It's always like unknown number, so he has his number blocked or whatever, and I'm like, oh, I guess I have to answer this. I just got traded. And he gave me a buzz right away to welcome me to the team. And just the little things like that, I feel like were stuff that he was so always kind of took care of those little details and stuff to really make guys feel comfortable and welcome. And he would be the guy hosting all the Halloween parties or stuff like that. So he loved Halloween, by the way. He loved getting into the costumes. But no, like I would say, like I said, he was just someone that, again, I don't think gets enough credit for how good of a leader, how good of a teammate, and obviously his play on the ice. He was a great player too.
I always just think he's a robot, because that's all I see of him. So he does have fun. Like he is.
Oh, he's the, you would really enjoy him. Like, again, obviously he's dealing with playing in some big markets in Calgary first and then Toronto. I feel like there's a certain, a sense of, I don't know, just had a certain, not brand, but just public perception and just being professional and stuff like that. But when he's with the team and with his teammates and stuff, like he's always in the middle of everything, whether it's chirping guys or whatever it is, like he's always right in the middle of it. So
no kidding.
I definitely love playing with him. Yeah.
I didn't like Dion. That's interesting. That's nice to hear, because I only hear what I hear from, you know, people who never knew him. So it's weird to see someone or talk to someone who's like friends with Dion Phaneuf. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
I'm like, I hate Dion. You can't be nice to Dion. Don't
but
say
you know
he's
that's
nice.
Part of his thing. I think part of his persona. Like, he loves to push guys' buttons too. Like, even his friends, like, he'll say stuff. Like I said, there's still a group chat we have with a few of the guys that were there in Toronto. So it's me, Nas, Leo, Morgan Riley, Gardner, and Dion, and Bozak in there. And Dion's always in the mix there. Just, he's getting chirped for his posts on Instagram, and he's giving it back to the guys. Guys are giving it to him for disabling his comments on his posts on Instagram. So it's great.
Oh, that's funny. All right, James, we'll leave it at that. Anything else you want to plug? What's that hat you got on? Is that your own brand?
This is starting up this summer. My youngest brother's taking the reins on it, and my Trevor and I will be helping out. But in Jersey, we're going to do a couple hockey camps. So Van Riemsdyk Brothers hockey camps, and just a way to kind of for us to give back a bit to the area that we're from and try to pass on some of the knowledge that we've been able to learn over all our years in hockey. So it's going to be the first summer of it this year, kind of see how it goes and kind of go from there. So we're looking forward to getting that going.
It's really smart to start a hockey camp during COVID. It's
exactly right.
It's going to be a hit.
It's going to be eight guys out there all at once, right?
Just separated by 20 feet. Don't touch anybody.
Yeah, get the megaphone ready. He's going to be,
This is how you hit. Pretend. Yeah. But no, good luck with that. That's going to be funny. Tim, do you have anything else?
No, thanks for coming on, man. It's been fun.
All righty. Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This is great.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you, James. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope we're doing well. We'll talk to you guys on Friday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.